1,232.
This is somewhat inspired by a book, but not a book review. Do we want to put the book name in the title?
No, sometimes you just mention, I read this book.
Yeah, it's more one of
so
those.
So maybe just give it a cool title.
Okay.
Episode 1,232.
Formed and Forming.
Welcome to the Sci-Fi Christian, bringing you theology at warp speed. I'm Matt Edison.
I'm Ben DiBono. We are back.
What's formed? What's forming?
Hopefully you. So I read a book this, I don't know if you kept the pre-talk as we were talking about that, but I just finished reading a book that just came out a couple of weeks ago from an author who I hadn't heard of before. I guess this is his second or third book. His name is Luke Burgess, B-U-R-G-I-S. He's a Catholic writer, but the book isn't specifically Catholic. And the book is called The One and the 99, and I'm going to highly recommend people go and check it out. I think it's one of these books that brings a lot into focus for some of the themes we've talked about, and there are books that bring a lot of new information to you, and then there are books that bring existing information into focus, and this felt like the latter one of those for me. It's also one I can recommend because it does not do what so many books, nonfiction books do, which is you read the first chapter, you're like, that was great information. Can't wait to hear what the rest of the book is about. And then the rest of the book is just rehashing the first chapter. I got caught in one of those recently.
You mentioned that. You really liked it, but you read the whole thing because you really
I didn't finish the whole thing. I couldn't do it. I couldn't get through it. But the book was – it's a really good premise. Like the book is called Inside the Box, and the idea is that limits push you to be more creative.
It's shocking how many books fall into this trap. Like I'd say – of the books published?
A lot.
I mean, do you think it'd be too much to say 75% nonfiction?
Probably today, and I think that
a trick or a trap. It's crazy.
Exactly. I'd say it's getting worse, and there's maybe, that's actually a theme we might come back to in the course of this episode to explore why. But anyway, The One in the 99. So the title is a reference to the parable of the lost sheep. But it's not exactly about the parable. What it's really about is the relationship between the self and the group, yourself and the various groups that you belong to. So Burgess has this interesting idea where he's talking about, okay, what is the relationship between the individual and the group, and what does that ideally look like? So the most ideal state for that would be that you are born into a family environment or otherwise close-knit community that is interested in forming you as a person. So you grow up, you are formed, you become a well-formed individual, what Luke Burgess refers to as the solid self. In other words, a self that knows who it is solid within its beliefs and actions. Then from there, you go out into the world in various ways, whether it's a job or, relationships or various communities or all of that, and you encounter healthy groups that in their own way are helping to form you more as a person, and then you in turn are also forming them. In other words, there's this dynamic where the group exists separate from the individual, but the individual becomes part of the group, and there's a healthy interplay as somebody who is a solid self joins a healthy group, and the two mutually shape each other, and that's how you have a society. Sounds pretty great, right?
Sounds good.
Sounds ideal. So what we have right now in our society is largely the opposite of that. What we have are people who are not well-formed. They exist not as solid selves, but as what he calls the pseudo-self, a false self. And they come across groups that are not healthy, are social contagions, are otherwise corrupting influences at worst, or at best, are not interested in forming the individual. I guess his previous book, which I have not read, but I'm going to, is about what he calls mimetic desire. which is the way that we, when we are in our pseudo selves and not our solid selves, are liable to just pick up desires from other people around us. In other words, you don't have any real opinions of your own. You don't have any real desires of your own. You simply have the opinions and the desires of the people that you surround yourself with. It's a natural human tendency, that mimetic desire. And you can see how, you know, it's not that the ideal is to be such a solid person that you're impenetrable. You do want to be shaped by others. You do want to be shaped by the group. But what we have now is where, because we don't have well-formed people, we are not well-formed individuals, we're so often on the other spectrum that we're just constantly picking up opinions, beliefs, preferences from the groups around us. I always think of, and the example I'm going to use, the issue in question doesn't matter. Just think about the example. But you know what we watched in the early 2000s around the discussion of gay marriage in society. So like overnight, practically overnight, you went from like 80-20 against gay marriage to 80-20 for gay marriage. Very rough percentages in a really a very small handful of years. It's like, okay, so forget the issue, forget your opinion on that. Just think about what that says about a society. That tells you you have a society of people who do not have strong, like they do not have well-formed opinions, whether it's for or against. They do not exist as solid selves. It's people who are being buffeted about by the opinions outside of them. And that's kind of what he means. So what I want to do is take this as a leaping off point and explore some of his own ideas. I will interject where I'm pulling from him more directly. But a lot of this is just my own reflection off of what he said. And the book is extraordinarily thought provoking. So I want to, this is not a book review. It's not even a interaction with the book per se. It's more of a leaping off point, but please go read it. I strongly recommend it. He's a good writer and it's very, very thought provoking. So what I want to explore then in this episode is I want to talk about three causes for this in my analysis, like where is this coming from, or what are three things that have contributed to this? What are three areas that we see this showing up in society, in our own life? And then what are three antidotes for it? So we're going to be very Dantean here and go three, three, and three. Okay, so three causes. First one, and I think it's tremendously obvious, but it has to be listed, is the rise of technology, and especially social media. And you know, we've talked about this before. I won't belabor it too much. But you know, if you think about technology, like part of the promise of technology in terms of group dynamics, and by technology here, I guess I mean the internet and internet-esque technologies from there, is that the promise of the internet is you have all these benighted humans with very narrow areas of exposure, and what we're going to do is put all of humanity into one big pot, and we will unleash a new era of human intelligence and empathy and understanding, and won't that be wonderful? That did not happen. Instead, what we did is we allowed people to find like the shallowest version of themselves out there, the shallowest version of community, meaning that and he makes this point in the book, and I'm going to probably state it less eloquently than he did. If you think about what a community ought to be, you show up and then you have your own solid self you're bringing to that community, and you shape it and are shaped it. And what happens on the internet is kind of the opposite of that. Everybody sort of arrives preformed. In other words, you know, I like, I don't know, we like the Minnesota Vikings. So you go find a Minnesota Vikings group on the internet and you go join that. And everybody sort of arrives already with it. It's backwards from how it should be. Rather than the group shaping that stuff, we arrive pre-shaped. We arrive with our preferences already solidified. We arrive with our opinions solidified, and we go find the group that already matches that. And then you throw social media into it, and it's this shockingly unhealthy dynamic. I think one of the things that I find very disturbing in modern social media is how performative it is. And you look at people who you can tell somebody when you interact with them in real life when they are sort of raised on the TikTok, Instagram, viral videos model, because there's a way of talking and a way of interacting that feels very performative and ultimately is very shallow. I think social media is a great example of where the pseudo self shows up, in that the pseudo self has no true opinions. It just has the opinion of the moment. And so what is the current fad or trend or whatever they call them in TikTok land? And you don't actually believe or value anything that you're doing. You're simply performing the thing of the moment, and that will change in a week. And then all of your opinions and beliefs and actions will shift to whatever the new thing is. And social media technology have allowed that to just go rapid fire. Cause number two, the fall of our institutions. So if you think about an ideal world again, you have various expert classes, and that's a really good thing. Again, everybody hold your horses. This is the ideal world, because there are things that there are more things to know about than you can know about. So in an ideal world, we want to have experts, people who have a more narrow understanding but can go a lot deeper on whatever that topic is. What's happened more explicitly, well, it's probably been happening for, you know, the better part of a century at this point, but has really gone into overdrive, I think, especially since the pandemic, is two things. Number one, we've stopped believing in our institutions. We've stopped believing in the expert class. And then number two, we've stopped believing for very good reasons at times. In other words, the expert class has fallen. They have failed to live up to what we expect them to do. They've at times just been incompetent, but at other times have been exposed as horribly corrupt. And then, you know, our response to that is to stop seeing the value in them altogether. And so you have this vicious cycle that's starting to form in society where we don't value our institutions. We don't value the expert class, and for good reason, because they are not valuable. You know, we've been doing Trump for the better part of a decade now, and people are so obsessed about do you like Trump or not like Trump that nobody stops and actually thinks about how wild it is that Donald Trump, of the Apprentice fame, is the president. Like, what does that actually tell you? If you knew nothing about his policies, what does that tell you? It tells you that the institutional class has failed fundamentally. The fact that in the LA mayor's race, the former star of MTV's The Hills was a viable candidate, and that there's a good case for him. Like, you know what I'm talking about, Spencer Pratt.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know him well, but
I don't know him either. I never watched The Hills, but, you know, I know enough about The Hills to gather that it was high trash TV. And it's like, so in an ideal world, he never would even sniff the race. And this is, again, no comment on his policies. Let's just analyze this apolitically.
What do you think about, would this also line up with, you know, early 2000s, Arnold Schwarzenegger becomes governor of California? Is this all the same point?
Yeah, I think that the Arnold, Jesse Ventura here in Minnesota, I think you could see those as early warning signs of this. So, but if you think about, like, okay, take politics out of it. Who do you want to have be the mayor of one of the largest cities in the world? Well, you want somebody with executive experience. Like, there's just practical skill sets that you need aside from policies to do something like that. And so somebody whose biggest claim to fame is being on a trashy reality TV show should never come within a million miles of that. The fact that he is, and he did, tells you something about where society is at. It tells you that we do not value our institutions. And you can say, well, we should. But they have failed to maintain our trust in people. And what does that have to do with the topic here? Well, that's, you know, if social media has eroded the self, the fall of institutions has eroded the group. It's eroded the things that we believe in, the things that we would look to be formed by. You know, in an ideal world, you can look to the mayor or the president or whoever and be formed by them as a positive example. And we can debate if that ideal has ever truly existed. But the illusion of that ideal doesn't even exist today. And so our groups have failed. Cause number three, and this one I think is probably going to be a little controversial, but that never stopped me. I think I would look to the sexual revolution. You know, in particular, if you think about a world prior to widespread birth control, you have a world where sexual activity is geared toward procreation, which means being geared toward the family. That is simply a fact, whether you believe in the morality of birth control or not. That is simply a fact. Okay, so you separate those two things. What happens? Well, the Pope, who wrote Humanae Vitae in the 70s, which is the encyclical that took a very strong stance against birth control for Catholics, predicted exactly what happened. And wouldn't you know it, he was right. Again, you can say he was wrong in his conclusion about birth control, but he was right in everything that he predicted. The downfall of the family, rise of divorce, a rise of selfishness, a self-focus that comes into that. We're going to feel the economic impact of this as the population begins to crash, like the population in Europe and in the Americas and in most of the first world is well below replacement rates. You're going to see all of this, and it's going to erode our society. So here you kind of have both sides of it. It's that number one, the macro effects of the sexual revolution are destroying institutions and society and groups and all the things, the 99 in Luke Burgess's title. But then the micro effects are destroying the one, meaning that if you are somebody, and you know this as a parent, and I know this as a parent, when you become a parent, one of the things that instantly happens is you realize, holy smokes, I got to keep this thing alive. And you become very interested in how do you do that, and how do you raise this child, and how do I become a good person, and how do I do all the things that I need to do in order to be a productive parent. When you have a fur baby, I'm sure you love your fur babies out there, not the same. When you make a deliberate choice that I'm going to be child-free, you are drawing your focus inward. You are contributing to yourself as a pseudo-self, not a solid self. Whether you like it or not, becoming a parent is one of the formative events of our lives. Okay? So three causes I see. Not exhaustive by any means, but technology, the fall of our institutions, and the sexual revolution. So where do we see then this impact of, you know, instead of healthy institutions and a solid self, we have a pseudo self and corrupt or at least hollowed out institutions? Well, three areas I'm going to raise that I think you can see the effects of this in. The first one is our media consumption. You know, longtime listeners, and I think especially people on Patreon, know that one of my hobbies is to go out and read Letterboxd reviews and judge the people who wrote them. I'll find a recent movie that's just getting savaged, and then you go look up the 5-star reviews and laugh at the people who wrote them. One of the little games you can play when you do that is pull up the person's account. Now, don't comment, like, don't harass people. You can do a little light cyber stalking, but don't harass anybody for writing a review. And then one of my little games is I like to see, okay, what other movies has this person watched? And 9 times out of 10, it's all recent stuff. It's all new. And so you have people who, if you just go out on Letterboxd or Goodreads, you'll see that their whole persona is just watching or reading the current thing. Whatever's in theaters, whatever's popular, it's just all of that. And why shouldn't you do that? How is that an effect of what we're talking about? Well, I mean, part of it's the surgeon's law thing. Like, 90% of everything is crap, and we've talked about that. Like, give the cream time to rise to the crop. That's one reason it's dangerous to do that. But the other reason it's really dangerous to do that is that you can see the manifestation of the pseudo-self. Like, you're just floating across the top of culture. What's popular this week? That's what I'm investing my time in. Full stop. Full stop. I came across, and this is satire, but I think it's very accurate. I came across this earlier this week, and it says, bookstores feel like they come from a parallel reality these days. You step inside, there's top 40 dance music blasting. You're instantly assaulted by multiple stands for books with covers featuring garish color combinations and huge, bold, simple fonts. They are all bestsellers with 75 awards each from prestigious literary institutions that were established 3 weeks ago. They all have trite, nonsensical, pseudo-poetic titles like, quote, All the Fire That We Hold Tomorrow. Very true. Every book is covered in reviews claiming it is brave, timely, a pertinent reminder, or necessary. Another stand is full of books promising me how to unbleep your finances or beat anxiety with Cato. A giant poster for a deeply moving celebrity autobiography hangs from the ceiling. You trip over a stack of books from 2017 about Trump gathering dust at the quarter. And then you return a week later to find a whole new suite of books, authors, and awards have been randomly generated and placed on display. So I told you we're going to come back to, like, you were asking, what's the percentage of nonfiction books that are just this first title thing? Yeah, it's really, really high. And what you're picking up on is evidence of the entire phenomenon of reading being something that is, at worst, you know, a nice diversion, and at best is something deeply formative to the self. And it's not even the worst anymore. It's like, well, many steps beyond that. It's the book talk phenomenon. It's like reading becomes performative. It becomes a way of being part of the current moment, of chasing the trend, of being the popular thing. So of course you're going to have books that are really just fluff, like, right? Like, they all need to be generated by AI at this point, and even when they're not, like, they're just meant to be easily consumable. Like this book I mentioned, and I really like the premise. I wish it was better. This Inside the Box book, great premise, great idea. And then what is 90% of the book, or at least 90% of the portion of the book I read, and I assume the rest of it is the same? It's just anecdotes. It's just story, example, story, example. There's no thought to any of it. Right. And so you have this thing where, like, our media consumption is being hollowed out. It is that this is what Burgess means by mimetic desire. I don't have any opinions. I don't have any desire to be formed by what I read. I just want to pick up on what the current thing to read, watch, listen to is, and I will take my opinions from that. And then as soon as that thing's not popular, you know, as soon as, you know, Supergirl leaves theaters and it's the next thing, I'll have an opinion about that instead. And I'll pick up my opinion from whatever the current crowd is. Whereas, like, formation requires real depth. It requires real time. It requires you to reach beyond the 30-second TikTok reel that tells you what you should watch or listen to or think about X, Y, and Z. Second area we see this is education. This is one Luke Burgess talks about a little bit, and he highlights that there was a shift well over a century ago of education being about forming the person to teaching basic skills. And it's like, you need both, and I think both have coexisted, but the focus got flipped. I didn't realize this, but I never made this connection, but he points out that, why do we call the liberal arts? Do you know?
No, I don't.
So the word liberal in this context means freedom. In other words, the liberal arts are, reading this stuff frees you. It makes you a whole person. It forms you. So you think about, like, the shift from humanities to the emphasis on STEM. Like, everything has to be STEM. Everything has to be practical. Everything has to be pragmatic. There's a shift there that's not healthy for society. It doesn't mean that STEM shouldn't be taught, but what is the primary purpose of education if we look at it to form the person? And nowadays, unfortunately, oftentimes it's to teach the test. That's radically, radically different than what we have now. And it's interesting how, if you pay attention to these conversations on social media, which you probably shouldn't bother doing, you'll notice that, like, there's a push for it to be even more in that direction. In other words, you'll see people, it was a thing for a while where it felt like I was constantly seeing people bemoaning the fact that the education system didn't equip me. And side note on this, one of the things I always harped on was, like, we never learned how to do our taxes. doesn't that just strike you as insane? Like, okay, I'll compromise. Every graduating senior gets a one-year trial of TurboTax. There, now you know how to do your taxes. Do you have any idea how ridiculously easy it is to do your taxes with TurboTax or the equivalent? It takes like 15 minutes. You don't need a class to learn how to do your taxes. Oh, we didn't learn how to do our taxes. We had to read these dumb books instead. It's like, what are you talking about? You know, so I want to talk about the humanities a bit, but let me first actually make the case for forming the person in the form of STEM. And I'm going to make the case here because I'm not a STEM guy. Like, I don't really like science. I'm not good at math and everything. But I know, like, your wife is a math teacher. And I would bet that if you asked her, part of what she likes about math is that there's something about it that puts you in awe of the world. At some level. I don't know if she'd put it in those terms or not, but like math and science open up. It's not just pragmatic. It's not just practical, but there's something about this is how the world works and you can look at it and you can figure it out. And there is an awe there for the person. And when we come with the STEM emphasis, we don't even see that there, at least not that much. It's, well, how do you do this? And then people are like, well, you know, now I have a calculator everywhere, so I don't need the math class. Well, what if the point of the math class is to form you as a person, not to teach you the raw skill of how to do a calculation that, yes, your phone can do much faster for you? Which, by the way, you know, we're seeing this debate play out in real time of like, well, AI can do it better. Define better. Define better. Yes, AI can write a book faster than you, faster than any human who has ever lived. Can it write it better? No. Better is not a quantitative thing. It is not the sheer act of putting words onto paper. It is the human soul that comes out. And we've forgotten this, and everything becomes just incredibly pragmatic and not focused on the formation of the person. And I think the results of this are playing out in just depressing real-time examples. I was thinking of like this hypothetical scenario, and everyone can decide how hypothetical it really is. But imagine this. Imagine you're a high school or college professor, and you're teaching a course, and one of the assigned readings is Romeo and Juliet, and you don't have time to go read it. So what do? You're going to go out, and you're going to ask ChatGPT to go summarize it for you and come up with some essay questions to give to your students. So fantastic. But, you know, yeah, you feel a little guilty, but you're the teacher. You've read it before. This is for their benefit, and I'm giving them a better education by using the tools at my disposal. And then what do your students do? Well, they, of course, take your essay questions. They say, I don't have time to read this stuff. I'm busy with other things. And so they feed the essay questions and the original text into ChatGPT, and they produce an essay. This goes back to you. And of course, you don't have time to read and grade it. So what do? You feed the essays into ChatGPT, and it grades it. And now we've completed the course. What a wonderful job, students and teachers. I don't think that's far off what's happening in many, many, many classrooms. And right there, it's like, is that absurd? Yes. Can people who are, you know, very focused on the pragmatic still see the issue with that? Yes. But that is the end state of the pragmatic goal of education. Because what we've done, incredibly efficient. If the goal was to have students, quote unquote, read and quote unquote, write an essay on a Shakespearean text and then turn it in for it to be graded, mission accomplished. And we did nothing to form the person. Number three, religious formation. I've been ripping on social media, so I'm going to give everybody a little bit of a social media homework here. Your social media homework is to go find the Instagram page Pastors with Props and enjoy yourself until you can't stomach it anymore. Are you familiar with Pastors with Props?
No, I've never heard of this.
So Pastors with Props is really doing the Lord's work. And what it is, it's a collection of short videos from sermons, mostly megachurch sermons. And it's pastors who are using props in their service. A shockingly large number of pastors bringing ladders on stage. A shockingly large number of roller coasters that have made their way onto stage. Wow. And it is shameful. It's hilarious. It's very Righteous Gemstone-y. But it's also a great indication of what has happened, in that our religious institutions, not all of them, and I don't just mean not the Catholic ones are good. That's not even what I mean. I know that there are tons of faithful Protestant churches out there that are not doing this performative nonsense. But the ones that are the most visible in our culture, the ones that are attracting the largest number of people, have forsaken their mission to form the person and instead made it to entertain the person so that they keep coming back. The best version of that, they keep coming back so that hopefully they'll pick up something about Jesus. Of course, the worst cynical version of that is that they keep coming back to put money into the offering plate. It doesn't matter. I mean, it does matter, but it doesn't matter. It still is the same root cause. We are hollowing out an area of value in our culture. There's something that is much, much deeper than the other two we've mentioned. For as important as education and reading and consuming good things are to the person, this is about the connection to God. And instead, what we've done is the megachurch culture, not exclusively, but for the most part, has led this charge to destroy any attempt at spiritual formation and lift the soul to God, which is the purpose of religion. You also see this in, you know, the mantra of I'm spiritual and not religious. Like, what does that tell you right there? Well, that tells you that I'm not as the one interested in interacting with the 99 so that together as 100 we can draw closer to God. Instead, I am rightly or wrongly looking at the zoo, the circus that is taking place here, and saying, I'm better on my own. And that misses the entire point of it. Let me go out on a limb here, too, and say, and I might be the only person with this opinion, I'm very suspicious of the value of things like VBS and youth group. Very suspicious. Now, Ben, don't your kids go to VBS? Yes, they do. In fact, they're doing two this summer, which, you know, has been a source of discussion in my house. Why do we need two VBSs? VBS oftentimes is daycare with a Bible verse. Youth group is often after school entertainment with a Bible verse. These are have become, not always, okay, I'm not speaking exclusively, but have become exercises in entertainment. And what we have watched happen, part of the whole Pastors with Props phenomenon, is that you are seeing people who were raised where this is the version of the faith for you. It's just entertainment. It's about you, you, you. And then, please say a prayer before you leave. Here's Mountain Dew. Here's pizza. And now it's like the adult version of that is the megachurch circus. So I won't die on the VBS hill, but I will at least poke my head up and say something there is deeply wrong. All right, so those three areas, media consumption, education, religious formation, three antidotes I want to give. Number one, when it comes to technology, put yourself in the driver's seat, and the second you realize you're not, you need to get out. Okay, so the second that what does that look like? Well, if you're using social media and you're connecting with people and it's valuable and like you're using it in a way that forms you as a person and helps to form others and is relational, great. The second you're doom scrolling, which, let's all be honest, happens a lot faster than any of us would like to admit, you need to get out. I'll give you an example of what I tend to do. When I have something I know I want to post about, like when Caleb was having his surgery or when Owen and I went up and ran the marathon, I'll put Facebook on my phone. And then I'll have it during that time. And when it's over, it's gone. I still check it like on the computer, but I know that it's too addictive. All of that stuff is too addictive. Scroll, scroll, scroll. So as soon as I start doing that, I realize, oh, I just took this from something that was healthy. Like, hey, my child's having surgery. I want to post updates so people can pray for him. That's healthy use of the technology. I'm in the driver's seat. And then takes like 10 seconds and it's reversed. And that should be the case with everything for AI, your media consumption, all of it. Okay. So if you need to be somebody who is in the driver's seat on this, number two, you need to read old books. not just because of Sturgeon's Law, but so that those authors can form you. We've talked about curation in the past. Like, I think curation, this is where I said this book, Luke Burgess's book, helped bring things into focus. Like, when we've talked about curation, we've talked about the need to go back and read and enjoy old things. Part of why it brings into focus to me, that is how you form yourself as a person, especially in an unhealthy society. Like, you need to seek out your own formation. Though you need to go get formed. So forget Supergirl. And I mean that in both directions. Like, oh, it's terrible. It's great. Who cares? Like, if you're going to see it and then move on with your life. But, or if you're not going to see it, don't see it and then move on with your life. And then go watch something that will form you as a person and challenge you as a person. Go read something that will challenge you as a person.
I just don't know the right time to tell you I went to see it yesterday.
How was it?
Not that good.
That's what I thought. Yeah, I mean, it's like, okay, we all, it's 80-20 rule, right? And my concern is that, you know, most people aren't even 80% new stuff. It's 100%. You know, if we just did the C.S. Lewis rule there, for every new book you read, read an old book. Like, that would do wonders for yourself as a person. And then, of course, number three, you need to go seek out the liturgy. You need to be in a church, whether it's Catholic or faithful Protestant or whatever, that draws you to God and draws you to the transcendent. You need to be formed. The second your pastor gets on stage with a roller coaster, you either need to challenge that if you're in a position in the church to do so, or you need to leave. This is the same reason I tell people, like, if your church treats remote, you know, virtual church over YouTube as a valid option, you need to challenge that or you need to leave, because that is a complete misunderstanding of how we are formed in religious community and how we are drawn to God. It is not, church is not there to facilitate your one-on-one relationship with God. I came across a quote about a quote. So I don't know the original, but it basically was referencing something that apparently Pope Benedict XVI said, which is that the sacred scripture is most accurately interpreted in the liturgy, in the mass. That's a profound idea, because what that means, and you can apply that to Pastor Bob or whoever, if you're Baptist, but what that means is that individual study of the Bible is valuable. Scholarship of the Bible is valuable. You know, all that stuff can be valuable, but it is most accurately, most completely interpreted when we are in the act of the liturgy, when we are at the four point of worship, the source and summit of the Christian life, and in the communal reception of the Eucharist. Like, that's where sacred scripture is most accurately interpreted. That doesn't mean everything in every homily is a value. That's not the Pope's point, and I'm sure people can take that nuance. The point here is, you live in a world that is not forming you, and because of that, you are probably not as well formed a person that you should be. So you probably have more pseudo self in yourself than you would like, and maybe can even be honest about. And unfortunately, you don't have the institutions that you're naturally coming across in your life to be able to do something about that. So the three antidotes, those are about take your formation seriously, and then in turn around with that and form others, form your children, you know, form the other people in your life. Like, and then in turn be shaped by them. Like, we can rebuild this, but we're going to have to be very intentional about it. We're going to have to pay attention to the churches that we're in, to the media that we consume, to the way that we use technology. That is how we find our way out of this. And it's probably going to be finding our way out one by one. I don't think the society as a whole is going to turn around, but those of us in the middle of it can carve out areas where we are becoming well-formed individuals who are formed and being formed, however I phrased the title. Yeah. I don't remember at this point, but it was good.
It was good.
All right, that's the episode.
Well, Ben, I can tell you put a lot of work into preparing this, so thank you for doing that. This is a good conversation.
Well, yeah, it's. I wanted to do it tonight because I actually didn't put that much time into it. It's like sometimes you get these episodes and they're there. So I was like, we got to do it tonight because it's there.
Yes.
Might not be there next week.
All right, yeah. You told me last night that you had this episode, and here we are. So Listeners, thank you for joining us. Ben, thank you. And that's all from here. I'm Anderson.
I'm Andy Bono.
And we are the Sci-Fi Christians signing off.
Goodbye. Okay,